Welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money using real estate. Now your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Happy Wednesday, happy hump day, middle of the week. As always, I want to start off with Einstein's quote, which is the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. There are a lot of ways we can work with that quote. I just want everybody to consider what that means for you, to consider the fact that the smartest person of all time, as many people regard him as, did not say he was the smartest person of all time because he figured out general relativity. He, in his experience, believed that the truly intelligent people are the people that are able to change, not the people that are going to be stuck in the same patterns over and over again, that are not getting them the results that they want, or even if they don't know any better, from the people looking in on the outside, they can tell that they're not getting the results that anybody would want. Those are the people that are not intelligent. The people that are intelligent, the truly smart individuals, are identifying what needs to be changed on a regular basis, even when that stuff is painful to do, even when that stuff is something that we could be doing for long periods of time, and maybe it's stuff we've literally been raised to do since the day we were born, or it could be a set of beliefs that we were given from the very day that we were able to walk, and now we're stuck in that belief system, and we're not going to accept any information that counters that, no matter what, for whatever reason. You have to make sure that you're going to identify what needs to be changed and move forward with that, or else you are going to be stuck in the same results. That if you're saying you don't want them, well, you're really saying that you do want them if you're going to keep on doing the same things that get you those results. Actions speak louder than words. What we're going to talk about today, and maybe this will take up the whole show, and maybe it won't, because if it doesn't, I will have something else special to talk about today. But Steve sent me a very interesting article about stocks this morning. It's an article that was published just 2 days ago, so today is May 11th. This was published on May 9th. And the headline is the following: NASDAQ 100 route erases $1.5 trillion in market value in 3 days. That's trillion. T-R-I-L-L-I-O-N. Not billion, not million, but trillion. So that's 1,500 billion in market value in 3 days. The index is down 10% since the Fed raised rates last week. This is the worst 3-day decline for this tech heavy gauge since September 2020, which of course, as everybody knows, was in the pandemic period. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on, and it's still crazy to think that it is May 2022 and we are still in the COVID-19 pandemic, but here we are. Now, what this is saying is that there's a lot of selling going on. Market confidence has dropped, as it were. It's just the way it goes. These indexes are mainly, in my opinion, a reflection of market confidence. And we're seeing, because of many, many factors going on across the globe, that we're losing that confidence right now, and there are indicators of a coming recession, which this being one of them, because this is a huge loss in value. And whenever you go to this article, and this is published on Bloomberg, you're going to see a really, really cool graph here that shows you some of the value losses. And one of them is Apple. And Apple is still the biggest company in the world. Apparently, it is just above Saudi Aramco, the ultimate gigantic oil company based in Saudi Arabia. It's literally valued at over $2 billion. It's almost $2.5 billion. So Apple, over the last... market value loss since May 4th is $226 billion. Microsoft is looking at $190 billion. And Amazon is $174 billion. And good old Tesla is 171, and Alphabet, aka Google, 125 billion. We're seeing huge losses across the board in the tech industry. We're seeing downturns across all industries at this point. What's going on for people in stocks is that they are starting to get very, very scared. They're in a situation at this point where if they were invested in Apple, they lost a lot of value. It's not going up right now at all. It's going in the direction you never really want it to ever go. And this is happening to people with the stocks in Microsoft, Amazon, Tesla, Alphabet, Nvidia, Meta, ASML, Airbnb, and Intuit, amongst other things on this index. The problem here that people are facing is just the natural reality of the stock market, in that it is not a matter of if the stock market is going to crash, but I always ask this question during my class, is it if or what? When? The stock market in the United States of America, just like any country with a formal stock market, has seen ups and downs and a whole lot of in between during its existence. We know for a fact that it's not always going to go up. The silver lining is it's not always going to go down either. But in either case, we don't have any control whatsoever of what the stock market is going to do. We're not allowed to have insider trading. We're not allowed to get tips to figure out who's really going to go up in value. It's basically extremely popular, glorified speculation. It's speculation because there's not a whole lot you can really use to identify what exactly is going to happen. And there's going to be a lot of people that are going to take pause with that statement, because there are tons of companies out there that are literally designed to make your stock investments make as much money as possible, using as much information as they can get in whatever legal avenues they can use. But they're never going to have anything close to a guarantee. Now, the pushback to that is, when we're talking about real estate, am I saying that it's guaranteed in real estate? No, and of course not. There is inherent risk to any investment whatsoever. But there's a big difference in the analysis phase of this investment when you look at stocks to real estate. When you're looking at stocks, you're going to get a lot of news jargon. You're going to get an idea of what this company is going to do. And you're going to hear a lot of people tell you that they have expectations for it based on the information they've gotten. But they're not really going to be able to put that in solid concrete information that actually proves what's going to happen exactly. Because you cannot get to that level of information in stocks, or else you start getting into insider trading territory. After the break, we'll start getting into more details about the stocks versus real estate. Stay tuned.
Were you told that it's normal to lose money in the down market? That's just not true. Hi, I'm Steve Davis, CEO of Total Wealth Academy. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing.
Welcome back, everybody. And to start off the second section, if you have any questions, you want to talk about what I just discussed, give us a call at KSEV 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. It's as simple as picking up your phone, dialing that number, calling in, and we will have our talk. If you want to get your questions answered, if you have any comments about what we just discussed or what you think I may be about to discuss. And as always, if you want to send me an email, that's trevor@totalwealthacademy.com, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com, including if you want to get a question in and you don't feel like asking it over the air, or maybe you're just shy. It doesn't matter. Just feel free to send me an email as well, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. Now, returning to the stock market, we just talked about the massive wipe in value in the NASDAQ 100. And of course, if this is going to be a downturn, it's just a matter of when that's going to come back up. But that's not really the most helpful thing for people to hear right now. You know, when you're seeing your stock portfolio go down, 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 down. Like, oh, well, buck up. It's going to get better soon, right? That doesn't really help your value now. You want to be rich now. You want to have that money now. You don't want to be playing games with your money like this. You don't want to be watching this money go away after you work so hard for it. And now for nothing you can control, it's just going down. You can't do anything about it. I mean, it's completely out of control. It's like a mudslide. You can just stand in it and get washed away, or just stand by and watch it do its thing anyhow. It's like, it's not going to be affected by anything that you do. Now, I wanted to really expand on this and see what are the realistic expectations for people investing in the stock market. And this was just my experience, and maybe this may sound familiar, but when I was growing up, the most common experience I heard from other people, from other families, when it came to investments was stocks. You know, everybody was talking about stocks. And stocks were the only investment actually talked about in school. And maybe I don't need to get into this yet, but I just find that quite unusual. Like, why is it that this investment is the one that's touted so much? Why is this one the one that's pushed to people in school? And why is this the one that's talked about on the news all the time, and the one that is considered the mainstream investment? You know, what's the big deal with stocks, and what exactly is it doing? So I took a look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which has been around for the past 107 years, since 1950. And really another big one is the S&P 500. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that the S&P 500 has 500 companies. So when you look at the data, you're going to be like, oh, that's more information, so that one must be more accurate. Well, yeah, in theory, but the Dow Jones, which is the 30 biggest companies, is actually just as accurate whenever you look at the graph side by side, with minuscule variations. And I just want to throw that out there up front, because I anticipate the possible pushback from using the Dow Jones with this discussion, but I did look at both, and I decided to use the Dow Jones because we're talking about the 30 biggest companies, especially when we just talked about the NASDAQ 100, which has many of those big, huge companies like Apple and Google. And we've looked at the average value of the Dow Jones from 1915 to today, and starting off February 1915, Dow Jones was at 1,581.83. Today, as of this article, which was published yesterday, May 10th, it's at 32,160.74. So for fun, let's take a look at exactly precisely what it is at this exact moment. Do you want to maybe guess if it's gone up and down since yesterday? Well, it's gone down by 213.45 points, and now we're at 31,947.29. So for the sake of my calculations moving forward, I'm going to stick with the one that I used, which is the exact number yesterday, not at this exact moment in time, 32,160.74. So that is a value increase of over 30,000 over the past 107 years. Sounds pretty cool. Once you do the calculation, you get to a value increase percentage-wise of 1,933% total over the past 107 years. Now, exactly when this started in this graph here was February, so I had to add the 3 months, so it became 107.25 years. And all I took was the 1,933% increase divided by the amount of years to get, with this math, 18 0.02% increase year over year over year. 18%. Let's just say 18% is what my math got. Sounds pretty okay so far, right? But I think a lot of us at this point are scratching their heads and going to want to ask me, like, how exactly did the 18% come about? Because the reality is, this isn't accurate at all. This is not accurate whatsoever. There's something wrong with this math that I did here to get that rate of return, which is not accurate. It's actually way off, as a matter of fact. This 18% is nowhere close to the average that the stock market has hit. And some of y'all may know this already, but here it is in case you don't. The average stock market return, according to the tokenist.com, as well as SoFi.com, and everything else that I've looked at, and these are the two clearest articles that I'm looking at right now, it's 10%. And there's going to be some people pushing back on that point because they realize that, hey, well, it's not even 10%. You haven't even accounted for inflation in that. It's like, yeah, it's gone up in this value over time, but $1 in 1915 is now worth $28.62 today. So that's almost 30-1. You know, $1 or $2 is going to get you a whole lot of food back in 1915 when you're going to need like $60 to get the same amount today. Huge difference. But we have to keep in mind too that the Dow Jones is already inflation adjusted. So when I got that percentage of 18%, that should have been, I hoped, accurate, but it's ultimately not. For some reason, I would love to get an explanation for that to understand why that's not correct, but the real average is 6, 7, 8%. 6 to 8% is the current average over the entire period that we're looking at. That is across the board. That is considering everything that is registered in the stock market. Just 6 to 7% on the money that's invested there. And that still has to deal with the ups and downs and all of the unexpected things that you have no control of in the stock market. My question is, when you're thinking about inflation, when you're thinking about the way money works, when you're looking at your options for investing, does 6, 7, 8% total, by the way, that's the total return, does that sound like something you want to invest in? If we took a step back from all of this for a second and just pretend that you are some place that offers investments and you don't know what it is exactly, but someone at this place comes up to you and says, hey, give me your money and I'm going to make you 6 to 7% and you don't have to do anything. You say, okay, I'll give you the money, but is that guaranteed? What's going to happen? And they say, well, no, it's not actually guaranteed. This is just the average we've gotten so far. And sometimes it's more, and sometimes there are crashes, and there's a lot of stuff in between that is actually impossible to control for. Ultimately, I don't control any of it, but just give me your money, and I'm going to put it in these stocks, and you'll make 6 to 7, 8%. You know, I ended up saying stocks there, but if we took this out and took ourselves out of this culture of stocks for a second and just looked at this from a blank slate, as much as we could, is this really something you would want to invest in to only make 6, 7, or 8% on your money? To me, it's not something I'm interested in, not only for that relatively, I mean, okay-ish rate of return, but I don't want to deal with the ups and downs of the market like that. I don't want to be an investment that I have no control over that is literally going to just do whatever it's going to do no matter what I do, and I just have to hope that I'm buying it low and then I'm selling it high. Which to me has always not made a whole lot of sense. It's like, so everybody that's going to invest in stocks has to buy low and sell high to make money. It's like, well, yeah, that's basically the theory. But of course, with the ups and downs, there's a lot of people that end up being on the backside of that where they lose money. They bought something too high, they lost a lot of value, and they ended up selling. And then people will just keep saying, you know, hold. And people have lost 33% of their value in their portfolio, 50% of their value, or more. And that's what happened to a lot of people back in 2008 and 9 when our last recession happened. Those were the two numbers I heard. One person lost 33% and the other person lost 50%. And of course, silver lining, ups and downs, but do you really want to deal with the stress and the suffering that comes with seeing your investments fall off like that? Not only is it something that could happen, but it's something that definitely will. It's guaranteed for the market to go down. It's guaranteed for you to be experiencing that stress sooner or later. Nothing's perfect, but we have to be cautious here and make sure that we're putting it into something that we actually have some meaningful control over. Never perfect control, but something we can actually analyze from the beginning and understand, this is the money I'll be making, this is the time I'll be out of it, and this is the cost from then, now, to the end point. Stay tuned.
If you have a financial planner, ask them these two questions. One, will I lose money in a down market? Two, do I still pay you if I lose money? If the answer to either question is yes, fire them and come see us. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets and create a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com. Thank you.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Halfway point with the radio show today. We just dove into what the stock market has been doing overall for the past 107 plus years since 1915, when the Dow Jones Industrial Average began calculating stock market value with that index of what is now the 30 biggest companies in America. So we saw overall what appeared to be an 18% increase year over year, but what is in actuality more like a 6 or 7% increase, and as high, I guess, as 8% in some situations, if you really, really want to split hairs. Some people get that, but the average is right around 6, 7%. So I'll say 7% from here on out moving forward, as the average rate of return once inflation is calculated for. The average rate of return is 10% before inflation. So once you account for the fact that as time goes on, money becomes inherently less valuable, 7% is the average. Historically, when we look at the Dow Jones, just like when you look at the S&P 500, which started a couple years later, you see the recessions that are listed on this graph from 1915 to 2022. It's a graph, you see it go up and down, and if you drew a straight line from the point at the bottom to where it's at today, it would be a straight line going at a steady upward incline. Not 45 degrees, I would say more like 30 degrees overall, so the overall result is good. Inflation is accounted for. Overall, we're in good shape, and overall, the stock market goes up. But not without the downturns that inevitably happen. Over the past 107 years, there have been, on this graph, 18 recessions. 18 that they explicitly marked. And when you look at the graph, though, you're going to see more than that when it comes to downturns, significant downturns. I mean, I see additional 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, at least, that are significant enough for me to consider that, hey, you could probably add to that. But if we're going to do the 18 that are officially considered, let's see what's the average for how many years it takes to get to a recession. Divide 107.25 years from February 1915 to May 2020 by 18, and the math equals right at 6, 5.958 with more decimals. So right at 6. I mean, that rounds up very, very much to 6. So we're looking at a recession every 6 years. And that's not exactly how it plays out, but mathematically, that's the expectation so far. To expect a recession, a considerable recession, a significant recession enough to be marked down every 6 years. I mean, not even every decade, but every 6 years. The worst one is, of course, the Great Recession of 1929. There was a lot of very unhealthy speculation going on. People started seeing the writing on the wall. They tried to get out, and there were huge runs on the banks and on the stock market where people were taking their money out as quickly as possible in what is called Black Thursday, October 24th. And basically, for the rest of the month until the end of October, it was just absolute chaos as all of these companies were getting wiped clean because people were panic selling, amongst other things, and then there was no value. There wasn't enough, and so many people lost their savings, so many people lost their investments, then you have all these people that can't invest anymore, and then you're in a bad situation, and then the United States experienced the greatest depression it's ever had. And this was a worldwide event, by the way. I mean, the United States is the most important economy in the world, and it was huge even then. So this was a reflection not just of American conditions, but worldwide conditions that caused the greatest depression we've ever seen. And that's really why they called the COVID-19 depression, some people called it the greatest since that depression. And the numbers actually don't really match up with that. So that just kind of felt like headlining, basically. But that was the worst recession. And the Great Recession lasted for a very long time, from 1929 till it got to the very, very bottom in June 1932. And then from that point on, FDR started making some changes that did actually seem to work. Then, oddly enough, World War II, a whole lot of things didn't really happen. But the 1950s is whenever things started to really pick up. And I think a lot of us already know that that was the boomer years. That was baby population expanding like crazy. World War II was over. People were very, very happy. We have a lot of people that were born in the booming years. Tons of people all over the place. And then you had a huge drop at the end of the 60s that lasted until Ronald Reagan, good old Gipper, came around. And then you had a huge rally all the way up to 2000. So you basically had a 20-year rally, more or less, from Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, to Clinton. Then there was that drop with George W. right around 2001. And then we had the 2008-09, which is our latest one. But if we're looking at 6 years, we already can do the math real quick and understand that, hey, when 2008-09 happened, that was, I mean, that's 14 years ago at this point. If we want to talk about the very end of that, when it started to pick up again, that was in the middle of 2009, so 13 years ago at best. The longest gap on this graph between recognized economic depressions is 11 years. That's the gap between 1990 and 2001. So that's between the presidencies of George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. 11 full years. So we are currently experiencing the longest period recognized without an economic depression since this was taken. And the reason we can really say that it's since the country started is because when you look at the historical record before this graph was even made, before the Dow Jones even existed, there were tons of economic depressions before it was made. There were disastrous situations right after we achieved independence. There were depressions throughout the 1800s. And of course, after the Civil War, there was a lot to deal with. But this is definitely the longest period we've had. So it's only a matter of time at this point that we're going to experience an economic recession. And because it's been so long, it's unfortunately going to be, I would say, probably one of the biggest recessions that we've yet experienced. It's really a balancing act, and I do agree with the argument that when there is going to be a lot of economic ups, there's going to be some significant economic downs. We see right here, right at the end of the graph, that we're at the highest value, which was a little over 36,000 back in July of last year. And since then, we've been going on a little steady decline to where we're at now, including with the route that I just discussed of the NASDAQ 100 with the tech companies. We're seeing some of this writing on the wall so far. We're seeing information that is highly indicative, based on historical data, that we're heading towards a recession. Like, right now. Now. And it's really just a matter of time. And it's a time that we don't necessarily know when it's going to actually happen. That's the whole thing here. We could have all this historical information, but we're ultimately not really going to know when this thing is going to hit the fan, as the statement goes. So, are people in stocks comfortable right now? Are people in stocks confident right now in their investment portfolios? I don't believe that they are. I believe that they are in a position, hopefully not as extreme as the people back in 1929, but similar to a situation where you're seeing a down market coming, or you're seeing something that's going to radically shift the market into a downward spiral, and you're probably trying to figure out how to get out of this, or not just get out of it, but put your money somewhere that actually builds you wealth, regardless of whether it's a high market or a down market. Of course, that is a huge factor in my decision to invest in real estate, like all of the investors here at Total Wealth Academy. There is a huge, huge difference between investing in something like stocks and real estate. When you are invested solely in stocks, it is going to be a matter of hoping that your information was correct. Couldn't be verified. Couldn't be backed up by a whole lot of stuff, lest you get into insider trading territory. So you have to make sure that you've got your money somewhere that's going to make money in the down market too. I'll explain all the details of that in just a minute once we're back from the break. Stay tuned, y'all.
Hi, this is Steve Davis of the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Most people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $100,000 or more, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the final segment of today's Total Wealth Academy radio show. If you have any questions or you have any comments about what I've discussed so far, give us a call, 281-558-5738. I love my callers, so if you want to call in, please do so, 281-558-5738. And if you have any questions, send me an email, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. If you want the free book of The Richest Man in Babylon, I will send you a free PDF of it for you to read. That's about a 30-minute read. Just send me an email to Trevor@TotalWealthAcademy.com and put in the subject line book. To finish off, we were just going into the details of what has happened historically in the stock market so we can manage our expectations if we decide to invest in it. I cannot just say don't invest in stocks, because if you are convinced that you're going to invest in it, I couldn't convince you otherwise if you're at that point. I'm going to try. I'm going to give you what I think. I'm going to give you my opinion. But when someone's convinced themselves to do something, they're going to do it. But I just want to put some of those facts out there for you to consider and at least understand exactly how this is working and understand the expectations that you should have when you're going to get into stocks. When you know that stocks go up and down, you know that you don't control stocks. And sometimes there are incredibly horrifying moments when you lose thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And talk about value, but I'll put a number out there. I've known a couple that lost over $500,000 in stocks. And this is the investment that's considered normal. You know, this is the investment that's the mainstream consideration. And this is the one that's being pushed around there. The one where you don't have control. You don't know what's going to go on. You can't get enough information to really make a reasonable, rational, well-informed decision. And honestly, it's basically guaranteed you're going to lose money. Basically guaranteed. Not to say that you will lose money in the grand scheme of things, like, okay, you'll make your 7% with the ups and downs still as long as you sell it at the right times. But that's a whole lot of stress and worry. That's a whole lot of risk. That's a whole lot of lost money that you should have been making money on from the get-go. Now, an example that we look at is a single-family house that was done in Katy. This was done back in 2014, so please bear with me on some of these numbers, because this house is now more expensive. The cash flow is going to be about the same, because what also went up? Your rent. Your PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, also went up. But your cash flow is still going to end up being about the same. When we talk about cash flow, here's the scoop on real estate single family. Your goal is to make, once all expenses are done, $300 and up on your cash flow. That is your ultimate goal when it comes to that. So if you assemble 10 of those houses, that's going to be $3,000 a month from the cash flow. And then when you do your taxes at the end of the year, you get a CPA to do it, you account for depreciation, and then you end up paying much less in taxes than you would if that $36,000 were a W-2 job. I don't have time to get into all the details of that today, but if you have a question about that, please send me an email at trevor@totalwealthacademy.com, because appreciation is one of the main benefits that people in real estate get. You say that, hey, this asset is depreciating to from this value to zero over 29 and a half years, so that value that goes down is what's cut away from what you earn from it. Subtract that from what you earn, and that's what you're ultimately taxed on. So people will end up being taxed on only 50%, 60%, 70%, 80% sometimes of that income. So the tax benefit is a completely different ball game when it comes to just saying, oh, I'm just making a $36,000 a year job with 10 houses. Like, no, that income is not going to be taxed at W-2. You're making way more, and you're not just making cash flow. But I digress. Like I said, bear with me on the numbers for this deal, because this was done back in 2014, so some of these numbers have expanded. But this was a deal that was a $200,000 ARV house, which is after repaired value. It was purchased for $115,000, $45,000 in rehab with $10,000 in holding and closing costs. And again, these numbers have been rounded to make it easier to digest, but they are right at what they needed to be. So the rehab was really like $44,872.30. Okay, so let's round that up and let's adjust it. All of these numbers are accurate. This was a deal that was done in Katy. So the total price once it was all added was $170,000. With the hard money loan, 75% of that is lent to you by the private money lender, including the ones that are on our vendor list at Total Wealth. They give you $150,000 to do this deal once you're pre-qualified. So you have to come up with the difference of $20,000. And the $20,000 is important because that's your skin in the game in the deal. If you're looking at a house in most markets around Houston, that's going to be your out-of-pocket normally, $20,000. And in a high market right now, which we're still hoping we get out of, because we'll have lower out-of-pocket costs and be able to get more real estate, your out-of-pocket's going to push more like $25,000, $30,000. With all that being said, the cash flow on this property ended up at $350 a month, so $4,200 per year. This, at that time, was only renting for $1,750. The PITI was right at $1,200. The maintenance and vacancy accounted was $200 each month. This is something that can be adjusted as you own the property longer and you build up the savings in your business account. But we make sure that we account for that because there's going to be some vacancy times, there's going to be some maintenance. You have to take care of specific things as a landlord, including the air conditioning. That's a big one in the city of Houston. But the rate of return, once you take that $4,200 a year, took it, divided it by your $20,000 investment, got you a 21% rate of return just from the cash flow. So when I did my incorrect math that got us the incorrect result and said that, hey, the stock market increased 18% each year once you took the increase over the past 107 years, that's already beaten by what's an actual cash flow on an above, slightly above average cash flowing house. Because your goal average is 300, this one was hitting that 350 mark. But there are people that are getting 400 and 500 or more that I've seen, that I've helped do deals here at Total Wealth Academy, or deals that they already have. And it's like, well, you know, I don't know what you need help with because you're doing it right already. Sometimes they just need that validation and they want to make sure that they're doing everything else correctly. But that's what we're seeing, is a 21% rate of return just off the cash flow on a $20,000 investment. So we have to make sure that we're addressing the entry cost. I feel like there's so much real estate knowledge, quote unquote, and education out there that doesn't go into those costs. You know, it's going to be the HGTV stuff that shows people with tens of millions of dollars flipping extraordinarily expensive houses, and you're going to see that part. But they're not really going to talk about the nitty-gritty nasty parts where they were just starting out perhaps and it was really, really hard work. Or you're going to see the people on YouTube that are going to say, hey, this is all you need to do, you know, do the BRRR. That's a big one I've heard these days, where the BRRRR. And it's like, what did, you know, someone sent that in and I was like, oh, what is that? And they were like, oh, you don't know what that is? I was like, no. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, that's a rental. We just call it a rental. That's buy and rehab and then rent. Like, okay, you have a different acronym for it. Big whoop. That's a rental deal to make cash flow and make all of the other things that you make on it, which is not just the 21%, but also the equity pickup on the property when you get it. Also, the principal reduction, because every time you collect a rent check, your tenant is paying your mortgage. In that cash flow, the mortgage is already accounted for, but in a mortgage is the principal that pays off the balance on the note. I always have to tell people, remember, your tenants are paying off your properties for you. And finally, you have appreciation on the properties, which is the valuation increase year over year over year. So with this one deal, it was a 210% rate of return for the first year and 60% year two forward because equity capture is made once. Do you want to make 6, 7, or 8% on your money with all the stress of the stock market? Or do you want to make 210% on one deal and 60% each year after that as long as you own it? For me, the answer is obvious. And if you want to learn more, visit us at Total Wealth Academy, totalwealthacademy.com, and attend one of my free sample classes. I'll be happy to share with you all the details and answer all your questions. Thank y'all so much for tuning in today. This is Trevor Davis. Thank y'all so much.
You've been listening to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decisions. To find out more about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit totalwealthacademy.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.